It is, I think, and it's about a density of data. I think ultimately we'll quit talking about wiggles, and we'll quit talking about seismic migration and refraction statics, and instead we're going to deliver, your high TOC shale version versus your carbonate block versus your scholastic, calcareous mudstone, and you're going to have an overlay of what your fracture orientation is, and you're going to have, and it's going to be information that that everybody can sit in a room and figure out. Okay, I want to avoid all the blue stuff here because that's going to rip up my bits.
Yeah. land in that shale, right, and then frack into the blue, right? Because we know that blue is probably going to be where the deliverables are, right? That's where that space is going to be. In which, those carbonates, specifically those dolomite stringers that we see, right?
Oh, yeah.
You're arguing that that's where we're going to see porosity and permeability?
That's where I'm...
That's the storage?
That's where I would think the storage would be, right? I don't go down the wellbore and check myself, but I have a hunch. I have
that's
a good hunch.
Okay.
It's definitely not the target to land in because it's going to kill the drill bits.
Oh, absolutely.
It kills the drill bits. We know that. I mean, this whole package of reservoir here is insane. I mean, this siliciclastic in light gray, and then a high TOC shale in a slightly darker gray, and then you have a calcareous mudstone, which means it fizzes, but there are no fossils. This is like micritic mud that's calcareous.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever that is, and then a carbonate that might actually have some fossils that we can see shit in.
Yeah.
And then there's definitely dolomite too, and I'm guessing that dolomite aspect is just being lumped in to both of those. Whatever the percent dolomite is in the carbonates, that's getting lumped. And now this is it. This is that image that everyone's looking at and saying, all right, where are you going to put your wellbore? How are you going to frack it? Where's the hydrocarbon coming from?
Pretty much. And what you see here on this particular, you'll see some zones that look kind of, maybe not so clean, or you'll see some zones down here. And we used
just
to
continuity.
Think,
is that what we call
that? We used to say, well, that's just noise. We got to get rid of that noise. Yeah. Well, guess what? We're now discovering that what we thought was noise is sometimes signal.
It's
that's
rock.
Real data.
It's rock.
And so one of the other tools.
I'm glad you brought that up, though, because that's something that I know we're firm believers in as far as like on the processing side is concerned.
Yeah.
You don't want to overprocess it because how much of that real data are you now losing, right? What you misinterpreted as signal.
Absolutely. In fact, we're going backwards. We're doing less processing or less aggressive processing.
Yeah.
And we're whittling away at what we think is noise, and we do it very cautiously and very thoughtful about what we're doing.
Yeah.
And we get to the finish line sometimes, and some of the traditional guys that got used to, quote, the auto picker of a horizon, well, you're going to struggle to auto pick that horizon, okay?
That ain't happening.
And you should.
It ain't happening.
And that's the thing.
That's the point. If you're struggling, you're probably in a good zone.
Yeah.
You know? Okay. So
there's probably some good stuff happening there.
The anomalies you have found may be what you were looking for.
Exactly. So this is where we're going. This is where we're trying to head to.
Yeah.
Do you have, and maybe we'll get there, do you have an image of what that looks like? That's based on the data that was shot. What was the original date of this of the Sea Ranch data?
The original, this is actually not Sea Ranch data, I must confess.
Okay.
This piece here is some stuff we did in the Delaware Basin.
Okay.
My colleague. But this is where we're going. This is what we're going to do to the Sea Ranch data. And by the way, it's going to be amazing.
Phase 1.2 for Delaware Basin.
Here's what I'm trying to get at, Bruce, with that image.
Yeah?
I'm trying to understand what potentially it's going to look like when you do a facies model with using the seismic data like it's being used here. What's actually going to be increased, in your opinion, between what was originally shot doing it this model and now what's going to happen a year from now or whenever it's to that point where you have that new final product? Are we going to see more layers? Are we going to see more detail between it switching from that calcareous mudstone to the carbonate along the horizons? Where is the data going to increase the most?
Well, and nobody knows the answer to that totally, but what we're really hoping for is if you go down here and you look at the classifications, we basically have, in this particular example, three or four classifications from the third bone spring up, and we have three classifications in the lower Wolfcamp section. Mm-hmm. Well, what if I could give you, say, five? Or six.
Okay. Now
maybe I can pull out the dolomite you talked about versus.
Now we're really starting to understand the story.
Got it.
Yeah. And then if you can, you know, backtrack that and see how the deposition changed or how these flows. Debris flows are fascinating out here, especially in the Delaware.
Oh my God.
P-Dog. MTDs? Are we talking MTDs? Unbelievable features.
Absolutely. Yeah. The debris flows. And we've got a really cool example. This particular data set where you put it into movie mode. And when you watch it in movie mode, you look at every slice of the earth, you can actually see this stuff, and you feel like you're watching the geology.
You can feel
dump.
The sediment flowing.
Yes, yes. You see these carbonate blocks, these big bad boys down here. They are fault controlled. They follow a very specific pattern. You can
fault
watch
control.
That thing weave and wind through the data.
Wow.
It's very, very cool stuff.
You don't have one of those movies on hand? I want to watch.
I could probably find one. I probably have one of those.
That'd be awesome.
Bring it into IMAX, dude. Yeah. Let's throw it up on the big screen.
Oh, yeah. So, but this is, we're hoping to get this detail on steroids. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, I'm following.
And we're hoping to integrate this detail with a lot of other stuff. This doesn't even take into account any of the shear wave information.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
This doesn't take into account any of the azimuthal information, which is another component of the fractures and
Could you
like
potentially
that.
Go from learning what's going to happen with this sea ranch chute with the shear waves and your azimuthal, all this stuff that's going to increase this resolution, can we now go back with better algorithms, more powerful algorithms to older data sets that did not get captured this way? Can we do a better job at extrapolating after we're done with this next shoot?
That's part of it, yeah. Because if we have the real data to begin with, we can tweak the algorithm to see what's fake and what's real, right? So that's going to have an impact on older data sets because, quite frankly, there's parts of the country we're not going to ever reshoot. Mm. You know, the Marcellus play.
100%. You know, you can reprocess, though.
But you can reprocess it, but you've got to know what you're doing. And so we're going to use the real data to figure out what's fake data and what's, you know, believable.
And
so we're trying to do that.
That's what's worth its weight in gold. So I can understand why Fairfield might not exactly like to just start giving papers and presentations about everything that you guys are going to see and learn. Because that's a competitive advantage as a processing company.
Sure, absolutely, yeah.
To work older data and work it into that new a potentially new higher resolution model. I guess that's where I was going.
We'll always keep something back that makes us with an edge.
Sure.
But we got to get this stuff out into the industry because, quite frankly, we're all in the same boat. We've got to find a way to be relevant.
High tide.
And do it. So, you know, I think we'll be pretty generous on the paper.
That's awesome. I hope so.
So
that's
the goal
so.
And that's the plan. So
that would be.
We'll see how that pans out.
Sure. Sure. So,
I always like to tell this little story here. So this is a, you know, I get to go out and see a lot of different clients, and you know, water and H2S gas are a problem in the Permian, you know, different areas. So I sat down with, you know, quote, I call it Company
Lee
X
County.
One time.
Recently.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a hot topic, you know, water disposal, all that kind of stuff. But we had a company in a particular area on one of our data sets, and they had serious water issues, and they had serious H2S issues. And it was kind of interesting because they were doing, you know, standard manufactured drilling and completions.
Yeah.
And just the problem was magnifying and getting worse and worse. And so this company X, they replaced the engineering team. That was kind of weird. But what was interesting about it is the only guy they kept was the geophysicist.
Uh-huh.
Now, they wouldn't have kept him, except he had one set of information in the seismic world that said, good well, bad well. It was that simple. It was an on-off switch, okay?
Wow.
So Company Y comes along. Guess what? They got the same problem. Water, H2S gas.
Yeah.
These guys realize, okay, we got a faulted system here. We got some fractures. We got some stuff. We'll just seal that section of the, you know, formation off. We'll start producing it. And that worked. You know, that saved them some completion costs. However, they lost acreage across there when they sealed it off.
Wow.
Company Z comes along. Same problem, right? These guys actually looked at it a little bit more intensely, the geophysics of this, said, hey, we got a set of natural fractures here, non-fracture here. They didn't seal it off. They actually just didn't complete it, okay? Or they completed it slightly different.
Yeah.
Right.
They didn't, as I like to say, tap into the ocean, or they didn't tap into the H2S gas. So they actually claim they're saving about $700,000 a well on completion costs.
Damn.
And they didn't condemn any of their acreage.
That's big.
Okay. That's the kind of stuff we've got to figure out how to do. This is just, you know, one little example. We want to be able to do this with the rock properties, the seismic facies, the reservoir mechanics. We want to be able to integrate all this stuff,
yeah,
and create volumes of information that are usable.
Right.
So I always like to kind of tell that story because I hear different stories over the years. But, you know, from my perspective, this is really what we got to do is I think geomechanics are the link between talking to engineers and everybody else that we're down here. If we can talk geomechanics, you know, geologic facies and tie that to an elastic facies, I think we'll all do well.
Yeah, no, that's what we're all going towards that for sure. We're all integrating. We all got that. The geologic facies, rock physics, obviously, elastic properties of the seismic. It's just that's absolutely fascinating, man. So this Sea Ranch, the Mud City Survey, what else is happening with this? Is this the end of the presentation?
This is pretty much, yeah, this is the end of the presentation in the sense that, you know, we've got our Mud City that wraps around the Sea Ranch, and it's just as dense. Okay, we changed the geometry up a little bit.
Where did that name come from, by the way?
Oh, I got to talk to Morgan on that. It has a historic meaning.
Okay.
It has something to do with Midland.
Okay.
And I don't remember the story on that.
Mud City.
I've talked to my colleague on that because she came up with that name, and I like it because I can spell it. You know, I'm not a very good speller, so Mud.
That's a pretty easy one to spell.
You know, I got some issues there. But no, and you know, it's really, we're hoping to leverage that 10.8 times denser data to get to some sort of point that makes sense. So but no, I mean it's a factor that we're shooting right now. We got, I think it's 400,000 source locations, so we got 300,000 source locations collected, something like that.
Wow.
And then we're getting to roll into our Mud City survey, which is we flipped the geometry a little bit on that, but it's basically the same density that we're doing now. And from that perspective, that'll take us another probably till sometime at the end of November.
End of November.
Yeah, so we started shooting in June.
Yeah.
And then we're going to shoot till probably the end of November. So we'll have some product out, you know, probably second quarter next year.
I was going to say about stuff. 6 months processing something like that.
We'll start feeding it out at that point. We've got a huge laundry list of stuff that we want to go look at. And we got some other cool stuff. We did a real cool test, which we haven't even dived into yet. We went out and collected every 16 feet information. So I've got a 2D line that's 8.25 feet. Down a road for 3 miles. And so we actually sampled the Earth's noise, and we're going to be able to look at that information and leverage that kind of information to add to the 3D. So we did some science, too, up front. So there's some really cool back-end stuff. We don't know where it's all at. I mean, we got a lot of things all laid out there, but we haven't actually got to the what it's going to lead to or what it's not going to lead to. I mean, I think there's probably going to be a lot of like, oops, that didn't work.
Yeah.
And it's like, ooh, what's that?
Yeah.
You know, that's typically what I find. So.
Yeah.
The thing I'm honestly most excited about is the ability that these other operators are going to have is to exploit the benches that have already been proven and now to have the data that they need in order to say, let's try that Barnett well. Let's try that Woodford well. Let's try that, you know, that Penn Shale well that we're seeing.
What's that
one? Yeah.
I don't know.
The Moonlight Project? But, oh, my gosh. This is something that's going to be, it's going to be changing to the way that we look at the Permian Basin.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's home at the end of the day.
Well, when you go back, when you go back and look at the shale revolution in a generic or the resource play, as I like to call it as well, I'll never forget, you know, it's about 2005 or so, maybe a little bit after that, maybe it's 2010. And the Bakken play was like the first oil play. It was kind of one of the first oil plays that kind of fired up. And I remember a bunch of the government agencies came out and said, you know, we said there's only 165 million barrels of oil recoverable, and they've already produced a half a billion. So what'd we do wrong? I mean, I just didn't know. It's like, how far off could they be?
Wow.
That seems to just be a trend in history, because wasn't it Jimmy Carter that said we were going to run out of oil in the
80s? 10 years. Yeah. 10 years will be out.
Shit like that.
But what was cool about that statement is they went out and did an assessment of the Bakken at the time, up in the Williston Basin. They came back and they said, well, you know, technically recoverable today, we think there's about 4 billion barrels of oil.
Yeah.
And if you read the fine print, you quickly learn that that's only getting like 3 or 2% of these tight rock formation wells.
Wow. That's so a recovery factor of 3.
That was the early stages of those. So if you then say, well, crap, if we could just get that to 6, that's 8 billion barrels.
Yeah.
So
there you go.
Well, those of us that have been working the Permian at that point, we all knew that's nothing. When they figure out what's going on down in the Permian, it's going to make the Eagle Ford, it's going to make the Williston Basin. Those are all important plays. Don't
yeah,
get
right.
But the
level,
potential.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And it wasn't
that stacked potential.
Incredible, incredible, incredible number. What do you think the number is?
How much oil do you think we got?
How much oil do you think we got in the Permian Basin?
Well, you know, some of the CEOs have come out and said it's close to 50 billion barrels.
50 billion barrels of oil. And that's with what kind of recovery factor, you think? 5%?
You know, I think it's going to be highly variable based on the formation. I think some of them are going to be in the 1 or 2, and some of them are going to be in the 10.
Wow. And you know what? It goes to the point that we always make on this show of increasing the recovery factors, man.
Yep.
We are firm believers, and we know that in our lifetime, we are going to see wells that crack into 25, 30, 45. Mm-hmm. We are going to break this thing open, and we're going to be so much more efficient. And we can get away with drilling. Who cares about parent-child relationships anymore?
Yeah.
Just optimize your best wellbore, your best reservoir. Get that recovery out. Let Mother Nature bring it to you. Understand your fractures. Understand your reservoir on that level. Drill less.
Yeah.
Produce more fluid.
Understand where we have those pore pressures, right, to deliver those hydrocarbon. Understand that, you know, the completions designs as well, right? They need to improve as well, right? What geochemically is happening, right, when we're putting these different acids and fluids into the reservoir, right? What's happening with the clays and how are different things precipitating out?
Yeah.
Those are questions that we just don't know right now.
Right.
But like you're saying, with these different types of inversions, and now we're able to look at not only, you know, calcareous mudstones, carbonates, siliciclastics, and clay-rich shales. Now we can start breaking out more and more and more and truly understand, oh, when we put this stage away, it sucked because, it turns out this was, you know, a smectite rich shale, right?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, now we're getting swelling involved. So the possibilities here are honestly endless.
Unbelievable. I mean,
work.
And
we talked a little bit about what I call the planning, steering and landing, and then also the completions.
Yeah.
The fourth piece of that, which is going to hit us really fast because these things have huge decline rates, is the production. Okay?
Yeah.
So there's already talk about, well, how do we go back in and either refract these? How can we measure the fluids? So wouldn't it be cool if we could actually set something up on the surface and we could literally listen to these reservoirs being produced, you know, take snapshots over time? Because one thing that shows up in seismic pretty well is pressure changes. You guys are putting some serious pressure in the ground out here.
Yeah,
yeah, we are.
You're putting some fluids.
To the moon.
Oh, my God. And so, you know, down the road, I think that's going to become a key component more on a very localized aspect. You know, they'll go out and say, all right, we've got the first, if we can increase what we've already drilled by 10%, that's real money.
That's right. Major. It moves the needle. It moves the needle.
Yeah.
Man, I'm really hooked on this, the fact that you shot the seismic before all the horizontal wells were drilled, before all that energy was put in the ground and then pulled back out. I'm just, my brain's turning on when you reshoot that. Is that going to maybe even open the doors for some EOR technology?
Absolutely.
And some EOR type thoughts of like seeing these major features that seem to be connecting these wellbores, right?
Yeah.
Maybe a natural fracture swarm.
Especially because, I mean, the original way these designs were pumped, right, is we were just trying to pump as much as we can, get these huge bi-wing fractures, right? We want to get thousands upon thousands of feet into our reservoir, right? Yeah. That's what we were modeling, right? Can you now see that within the seismic data?
Go back, isolate perfs and stages in a well, in a horizontal that you know is communicated over maybe a couple of miles, and now try to flush something through that. Add in something into that little stage and start communicating horizontal wells between this massive natural feature that we know is there with sound geology mixed with this unbelievable data set. Is that
real data?
Real data.
Real data.
Not data. Data. We're all real data.
Yeah.
Unbelievable real data. I mean, that to me, it's all about recovery factors increasing and EOR.
Yep.
Getting just way more out of our wells and longevity of the production. We got to increase that gap under the curve. These drastic decline curves do not work. It's not okay.
Yeah.
So I'm a huge fan of you guys taking on this task.
We're fortunate. We're very, very fortunate. Fasken's been good to us. And
I can't, and I mean, I just hope you guys, the brightest future, the best of luck, and just get this thing done. Paying attention. Are you doing anything as far as hiring interns and getting help, getting technical help that's sound and solid to get you through
this? We're growing. We've actually hired some people this year.
Wow, fantastic.
We've been through a lot of transformation, but, you know, there's probably room for that down the road.
That's huge.
As well. And you know, it'll be projects like this that we'll have to prove up that have its worth.
Right.
Its value.
I think it's going to happen. I think you already said it's happening. There's already operators out there that are chasing new things that they know they can't see. And then all of a sudden they're going to see it and they're going to get better. Their wells now are doing it with the data they have. Now they can go and optimize. And all of a sudden there's badass Barnett play totally breaking out because of what you guys were able to provide. And then everyone's going to go, well, they were the first ones to do it. Why would we go with somebody else and try to do the same thing that they just did?
Exactly.
I feel like Fairfield, you guys potentially could just absolutely skyrocket head above shoulders in the specific industry that you guys are good in. And if that company grows, we want to help with driving interns. We want to help people get information
about. It's all
about
the next generation getting this stuff done, yeah.
Right?
So, yeah, it really is. I mean, there's plenty out there for all of us to do. And we've got to drive. We've got to get people thinking outside the box. We've got to get people involved.
Right.
And so, you know, I think the intern approach is a great approach. Actually, you know, we a couple of years ago we hired an intern and came over and, you know, lived in our office. We taught them how to process seismic data. They were working on their master's or PhD thesis at the time. It's like that person when they got done after working with us for 6 months.
Yeah.
And they were like one of the, you know, just one of the office mates, right? You know, they were there on Monday morning for fantasy football results.
Yeah.
They were there for donuts on Tuesday, whoever, you know, won the thing or whatever. And so they just became like part of the family at the time. But when they went back into the academy and they had knowledge on seismic processing and they could call, you know, BS on something that so-and-so had interpreted. Well, I don't believe that because of X, Y, or Z.
Exactly.
Gave them credibility. So I think it's a good area that all of us need to work on is bringing more people in and trying to get them up to speed, because the processing world is it's complicated. It's time-consuming.
Right.
It's, you know, but if you link that with the – and Dawson's awesome at this, by the way. They bring people out all the time on the cruise and – you know, work on that. We need to work more on that on the processing side. And
Skippo, you got anything for the end of this? There's a lot there.
There's a lot. There's a lot to chew on.
A lot to chew on, man. And we can't – I think that's it. I think we just can't thank you enough for the opportunity to share that story. We're thankful for that Bruce Carr is on this program. I hope that you guys really do take advantage or think about the future of and assume success. Assume success internally.
I agree. Totally agree.
Set up that stage for those interns. Provide them with the tools that's cutting-edge technology, cutting-edge data, and because you guys, I think, have an unbelievable future, and Fasten's going to prove it, and everybody else that's involved in this shoot is going to prove it with successful results.
I agree. Totally on board.
The world is watching, sir.
All right.
And we are
excited. Got a lot of eyes on this, yes.
We are excited. Thank you so much for sharing the mics.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks.
We out.